All right. Thank you for joining us. This is the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I'm Nima Vedati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the intertubes. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
Excellent. I am broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And we have a nifty guest today, this guy named Chris Novoselic. Do you want to read a little bit about Chris Novoselic?
Sure, man. Nima Vedati? Everybody should already know, but in case you don't, he's a grunge rocker turned grange rocker, Chris Novoselic. He's probably the most interesting man in the world, straight out of Compton via Seattle and Croatia. He's an airline pilot, author, political activist, candidate for office, radio personality, and gentleman farmer. He played bass in a little-known rock musical group called Nirvana. He survived playing in the band Flipper. He quit the music business but was just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he's currently playing music for Kicks with members of the Foo Fighters, the Germs, and the Beatles.
Wow. That's nifty. So how you doing there, Chris?
Good morning. I'm doing fine, thank you.
Broadcasting from your gentleman farm in the noble Pacific Northwest?
Yep, I'm up here in the woods in where the Columbia River meets the Pacific Ocean in Washington State.
Yeah, nice, man. Nice. So you and I live in what used to be Indian territory, Native American, I guess is the right
word.
Don't
we all?
Yeah,
though?
I live in Wakayakan County, which is a Native name. And sadly, there are no Wakayakans left. The plague. They were victims of the plague.
Man, the plague. Was that like early biological warfare from Whitey?
I don't think so. I think it was just a bad... It was good for Europeans, that's for sure. Well, they lost a lot of slave labor, but
It wasn't like the smallpox that was intentional germ warfare.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it just happened. It's terrible. They should have some kind of like memorial or day of recognition for them.
Well, you could do it on private property too, without having to go to the government to do it.
You could write a ballad to them.
Yeah, and perform it with Flipper. So the first, I guess are we doing 2 hours or are you going to play it by ear?
I'm going to play it by ear.
Okay. So
I feel pretty good right now.
Good. Just give us some time. We'll make you feel bad.
I'm feeling good.
So I think the first half of the interview is going to be about rock and roll and the second half is going to be about politics. So okay. I don't know how to gauge that though. If the first, let's talk a while about rock and roll. So you played in two of my favorite groups. You played in Nirvana and you played in Flipper. And now you're playing with someone from one of my favorite groups too, the Beatles. And the Foo Fighters are pretty good too. I like them. But you're playing with Sir Paul McCartney and you were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I guess I want to ask a question about you grew up like poor little kid, middle class or poor kid in a weird small town in Washington and... what would you have thought when you were a kid if someone said, you're going to be playing with someone from the Beatles someday?
Yeah, it's one of my catchphrases is, will wonders ever cease? When looking at my life and how many privileges and just incredible experiences I've had and continue to keep having. I just try to have a good attitude and be respectful.
Yeah. Is Paul McCartney a fun guy to hang out with?
Paul McCartney is a cool dude. I love the man. Yeah, he's easygoing. He's a great musician. He's inspiring. You know, we went into the studio that day, and Dave invited him over, and he was making that film, Sound City. If you haven't seen it, it's really good. It's about this recording studio in Los Angeles that like so many classic records were recorded on it. Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, Foreigner, Dio, Nirvana, Nevermind, Neil Young. And so Dave was asking interviewing all these great musicians, like, well, what are some of your influences? Like, what got you into the music? And they're like, oh, seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. And so Dave knew Paul and said, hey, you should come down and jam with Chris and Pat and I. And he's like, sure. So he comes in there and we meet him. And it's like, wow. And he's got this guitar that's like a cigar box. And he's got this tiny little amp that runs on like D batteries. And he just starts playing this just badass, really mean slide guitar. And he's like, it's in a D. And so I started jamming and with him and Dave and Pat. We started picking it up. And I tuned my bass, my E string down to a D. You're a bass player, Michael. You know these things. And so you get kind of a grungier sound. And so then that seemed to be what I needed to do. And then I started to really lock in. And then he shot me this riff and I picked it up. Then I shot him this riff and he picked it up. And we just started jamming. And then I looked over at Dave and Pat and I got, it was bittersweet because I hadn't played with them like that in like 20 years. And and there's this left-handed guitarist there. And it was cool because like 20 years ago, if we would have walked out the door, you know, and we walked back in 20 years later, it was just like it was a moment ago. You know, that 20 years, like we were just, it's hard playing with new musicians. You got to kind of feel each other out. But Paul, it was really easy. It probably was easier having Dave and Pat there for me. And we put a song together. And it's just, I think it's a cool song. I'm proud of it. We got a Grammy nomination. And, you know, it's just a cool song.
Yeah, it must be hard playing with the three guys after Kurt dying. I don't know how to say it in any other way. He was a good friend of yours from what, high school or grade school? I mean, you knew him a long time.
High school. I knew him like high school, teenage, late teens.
And you guys were tight, right?
Yeah, we were good friends. We went through a lot together. And Nirvana was my first band, and same with Kurt. I mean, it was our first band we were in, and one thing led to another, and we were like the biggest band in the world.
And it wasn't overnight. Like, you guys were people look at it like it was overnight, but you were touring clubs for 6 or 7 years, right, before you got signed?
We started in like 86, 87, something like that. And we got signed in 90. Yeah, it was 90, 91, something like that. And yeah, we developed, and that's important for bands to do that. And it takes time. And there's a great music museum in Seattle, Washington, called the Experience Music Project, and they have a Nirvana exhibit there, like Nirvana taking punk to the masses. And when I first was approached with it, I'm like, oh no, not a Nirvana museum, no way. And then they explained things to me, like, well, this is actually about the community and the people around and the infrastructure and what it takes to make a band. And so there's a lot of other bands and a lot of other people in it. And that's what sold me on it, because there was a music community that gave us the opportunities, the clubs and the promoters, the labels, the fans, beer vendors, right? Music industry is wildly speculative. Like, you know, promoters, they'll make money one night and they'll eat their shorts the next night, right? So it's a real capitalist system. And anyway, but it was it was community, and we were compelled to make music, and we had the support we needed to get us where we needed to go.
Is there a record from Michael's old band Bomb in that museum by any chance?
There is. You know that, really? Don't you? He asked me to donate some records. So
Yes. Thanks for breaking the fourth wall. Yeah, man. Well, what do you think about Michael's band, his rock musical band, as his dad called it to us?
Well, I'm a big Bomb fan, and it's Bomb. Bomb was a grunge band, but they weren't from Seattle. Maybe if they were from Seattle, history would have been a little different because of all the attention. Bomb was a heavy, weird rock band, like Nirvana was. Like, you know, we were we remixed In Utero this year, and we re-released the remix, and then just like listening that record, I felt it needed to breathe a little bit, so we went back to Chicago with Albini, who recorded it and mixed it originally. And just listening to that record, it's just like, wow, some of this music is so intense, it could stand up to any, like, you know, Scandinavian death metal. I think so. And I think Bomb is the same way. It's still enduring. Like, it's just, it's heavy, and it's just kind of weird and different. And it's,
you
just,
and
it's
Kurt, like, rock. Weird, different music like that. I mean, what are some of your
Kurt
influences?
Like, weird, different, everything. If you look at his art, he was a really good painter and a sculptor, and just, he just kind of like weird art.
Okay. And he liked Bomb then, because Bomb is very weird.
He turned me on to Bomb.
Wow. That's cool.
He said, we were hanging out in his apartment, he's like, check out this record. He played I Loved You, Then I Died.
Wow. That's like a blessing from the Pope for me to hear that. I knew you liked Bomb, because because I read your article about it in the Seattle Weekly. And it, we weren't influenced by you, and you were not influenced by us. Your band and my band started and ended the same year. We were both influenced by the same stuff. I'd say primarily Flipper, who you later had the honor and horror of being a member of. And that's what I want to talk about in the next bit, because I am such a huge Flipper fan, man. Flipper, they're the weirdest, coolest band. And like, nobody knew who they were. I mean, they had a following, but I think they got more fans after Kurt wore their homemade T-shirt on Saturday Night Live than they ever had, you know, in the 15 years they were together before that, or 10 years before that.
Flipper is an important band.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what really kind of opened my mind. I had an epiphany listening to Generic Flipper. I was like 18, 19 years old, laying on a waterbed. and I listened to that record. I'm like, this is just kind of weird. I don't know. And then I listened to it again, like, I don't know. Then the third time it sunk in and my life changed. It was like, this is the heaviest, most beautiful, sublime music ever made. Some of it. It's up there with like, and, you know, they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
It was weird, though. They should. Seriously. And it was weird, because they weren't normal music. Like, I turned Nima onto them yesterday and he loved them. And this morning, he was talking about them this morning. And when we first got on to pregame, I was like, I heard some background sound, and I was like, oh, you listening to Flipper? And he's like, no, that's my wife vacuuming.
Falcone, Ted Falcone is the Jimi Hendrix of rhythm guitar.
That's Jimi Hendrix of rhythm guitar.
He is.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, I can't repeat on radio the story I told you the other day on the phone about meeting them in D.C. It's not radio friendly backstage at the 930 Club. But I can say that the first time I ever saw someone going through heroin withdrawal was shortly after I moved to San Francisco. I was walking down the street, and out of the fog, this like lurching Frankensteinian kind of thing starts walking toward me. And it's Bruce Luce. And he's like, hey, Michael, you want to buy some bass equipment? And he looked like sickly. And I was like, I was just honored that he knew my name. I was like, wow, he knows my name. But, you know, he knew my name because he was trying to sell me all his bass equipment. All right, we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Krist Novoselic from Flipper and Nirvana and Sirvana and book author and pilot and other things when we get back from this trip to the free market on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
On the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show, I am Nima Vidati. We've got Michael W. Dean over there, too. And with us, our special guest for the day, Krist Novoselic. That's how he told me to pronounce it. You know, pronounce the T, too? Krist?
Yeah, sure.
You know, when I because you went by Chris early on in Nirvana, and when I saw it changed back to Krist, which is actually the traditional Croatian spelling and pronunciation, I didn't know that, and I saw it on record, and I thought you were kind of trying to be contrarian, like Christ with a K, like something dark metal or something.
That's again the Scandinavian death metal. It's basically the name is Kerste. It's K R S T E, but that didn't translate very well, and so they just put this Christ in on the birth certificate. K R I S T. It means Christ. I mean. But Christ. I'm not necessarily a religious person.
So. But a lot of names mean Christ. You know, Christopher, Christine, all variations Jesus. Of it. Jesus. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
Are you a fan of Death Clock? Are you a fan of do you know what that is?
I don't know what that is. I feel like he's about to
Metalocalypse. It's the cartoon. It's the wonderful cartoon that's based on. Oh, yeah. You don't know about it. Because we interviewed that guy too. Yeah, you should. I'll send you some links, man. You should check out Death Clock. It's kind of like the Partridge Family. Like, it's this group that all lives together and has zany adventures, but they're a Norwegian death metal band, or an American Norwegian death metal band, basically. Yeah.
And whole hundreds of their fans die in every episode.
Yeah, like when you go see them, you have to sign a pain waiver before you. Like, they don't do anything to you, just supernatural events happen in hurricanes and things like that whenever they play. So.
That's the power of music.
So that was kind of like Flipper, but on a much smaller level. Like, whenever Flipper came to your town, bad things would usually happen. Back in my day, it might have changed by the time you got around to playing with him. But tell us a Flipper story.
Oh, well, where do we start? They're a great band, and they're sweet men, and they've mellowed with age, okay? So, but they're still Flipper. So, like, I think Bruce... he feels like there needs to be this component of chaos at every Flipper show. And I didn't feel that way. Because you can't keep that up every night because you'll fall apart and die. Right. And so that's why it got hard for me to play live with Flipper, because maybe I'm just kind of, I just wanted to play the songs. Like when I first started to play with them, we were doing That's the Way of the World and, Shine, and I'm like, oh my god, this isn't a cover. This is like, I'm in the band playing these songs. And it came together, you know, it started to come together, and we got the groove so we could play together, and it felt good. And then we started jamming, and we actually made a record called Love Fight, it's called. So Love is the studio recorded album.
It's good. It's really good.
It's good. You
gave me a list of the other day. We pre-gamed for about 45 minutes, and you gave me a list of political treatises to go read and to do research to interview you. And I must admit, I didn't do that, but I went and listened to several Nirvana records in their entirety over again, and listened to Love by Flipper, which I've never heard, and watched some old interviews of you guys. And yeah, that was my prepping for it. And Love, the first couple songs of it, I was like, the music's great, but I don't really like the singing. It's different than old Flipper. And by the end of the record, I was like, I want to hear this again. And yeah, man, it was kind of good. I liked it because usually when bands reunite in any way after a decade or two, you know, it's kind of like that Black Flag reunion a few years back. Like, some reviewers said, yeah, it was pretty good. All the notes were in the right place, but I couldn't help but thinking that somewhere in the Midwest, in some mother's basement, there are four 16-year-old boys playing these exact songs better at this exact moment. And I didn't feel that way about the Flipper record, Love. It was like new Flipper, and it was really good.
Yeah, it was new Flipper, and those first two songs on the record are, there's actually like four parts to the song, which is like prog rock for Flipper. And then you get, once you get into the record, there's more kind of just like these one riff droners that, you know
what Lou Reed said? Lou Reed said he liked to write songs with two chords, because three chords, that's almost getting into jazz.
That jazz or like a Yes record or something.
Yeah. So so they came and recorded at your house, right? And with Jack and Dino?
Yeah, we recorded, and Jack and Dino recorded the first Nirvana record, Bleach, in our single. And we had a good time. It was productive time, and we worked hard.
Did they stay there?
We had a lot of fun. Yeah, we stayed here.
Like, you lived together like the Partridge Family?
We were like the Waltons. Like, and my wife, Darka, she would cook for us. And so we were like, there was a big dinner table. We'd sit around the table and pass the mashed potatoes, Grandpa, you know.
Will passed away. It's, they're kind of like Spinal Tap. Like, a lot of their bass players have died of a heroin overdose, and you survived, Flipper, because you're not doing drugs.
That's been the tragedy of Flipper.
Yeah.
But they keep going.
You didn't have to hide the sheep from them, huh? So we'll have more with Chris Novoselic. talking about Flipper and rock and roll and politics and Nirvana on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Show when we come back from the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed,
Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Okay, we're back on the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. Thanks for sticking with us. I'm Nima Vedati out here in the Texas Hill Country. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in Wyoming. And we're going even farther than that. We've got
All the way back to 1991. That was Bomb doing, I can't remember what the name of that song was. I don't know. I just knew when the drummer would start playing, you play it. So
Happy All the Time.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, it's actually called The Power of Suggestion, I think. I don't know. But yeah, that's funny. You know that, and I don't. Yeah, Nima and I did all the music for the breaks on here for the bumps and the teasers and things. So we're talking to Chris Novoselic here on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza Show.
The bass player for Sadgasm.
I was just going to say, he's the bass player for Nirvana and Flipper and Sadgasm. Tell us about Sad. You know, I just think that, like, you know, it's one thing like be the biggest band in the world. That's pretty cool. But to me, you're really somebody when they parody you on The Simpsons. That's what really is making it.
They were parodying Kurt Cobain. Well, I was waiting for somebody, and so I was in a bar by myself in this empty bar. And you know how they have TVs in the bar and with the closed caption?
Yeah.
And The Simpsons is on. And so I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, The Simpsons. And I'm looking at it and like, hey, wait a minute. And there's Homer Simpson wearing the same shirt that Kurt wore in the It Smells Like Teen Spirit video. And it was like, and it was some kind of, the band was called Sadgasm, and it was a parody of Nirvana. But I'm like, you know what? We were not like a sad band. And Kurt Cobain was actually a very funny, humorous person. I mean, it was just kind of, it was kind of weird. Like,
yeah, no, you guys were hilarious. You know, I
can
remember
I
watching...
be in a bar by myself? I wanted to be in a bar by myself, and I couldn't do it.
The TV was talking to you. You know, it's like, yeah, that's one of the symbols of like mental illness is when you think the TV is sending references about your life, but sometimes it really does. So, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nima's really into, Nima kind of thinks you should do stand-up. He's a really big fan of, go ahead, Nima.
Really?
I don't know if you should do stand-up. No, I just think you guys are funny. You're right. People, The Simpsons thought you guys were Sadgasm, but I remember watching a bunch of, like, bootleg VHSs of, like, your live shows and listening to things like Play the Effing Guitar Man. And you guys are funny, the way you interact with the audience and the things you say in between songs. And I always thought you guys had a really great sense of humor.
I also think that, like, grown-ups that didn't get it, those grown-ups who were like, oh, this music's ultra depressing, like, No, man, it was celebratory to me. And, you know, some of it was sad, some of it was happy, some of it was introspective. But, you know, life is all those things. So I think great music should reflect it.
Yeah, music is feelings is that you can hear.
Life is what, Chris?
Yeah, life is exactly. I second that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can run the gamut, you know. And I think that people who didn't get it, a lot of them were people that had never heard punk rock, and they thought, like, you know, all of a sudden they were hearing something that resembled angry punk rock coming from every speaker in every parking lot, and they were like, "What is this music? This is angry. I don't understand. It's threatening and scary to me."
Yeah, you know, we grew up in the punk rock age in the 80s. That was an incredible time because you had young people coming together and making their own world. And what we did is we turned our backs on the state, on the corporate world, media, society, and we created these structures that were independent. And we were motivated because we wanted to meet our own needs, is what we did. We wanted a community of people who weren't mainstream music that was compelling and independent and real.
Was the conflict between the corporate world sort of taking that and running with it and kind of capitalizing on what you guys thought was your counterculture? How did you guys react to that?
As far as Nirvana goes?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, with our counterculture, well, it was hard because a year before, we were protesting the Iraq war, and, you know, it wasn't so much like we really didn't know what was going on politically. You know, well, sure, it was about oil and, you know, American global supremacy or whatever. It seemed like for us, there was all this petty nationalism, and it was like a football game. But yeah, we'd see images, you know, people were getting bombed and dying. And so we were appalled by that. And so that only reaffirmed our worldview. Like, gee, these people are dangerous. Or it's kind of like Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider. You know, they're scared, but they don't go running scared. They get dangerous. Remember that scene where they're sitting around the campfire?
It's kind of a premonition of before they get shot and killed. Yeah, a little.
Yeah, exactly.
It's foreshadowing.
They don't go running scared. And they get dangerous. And so it was just I guess this is our own personal experiences for which are unfortunate, you know, and our families are, you know, feeling alienated. And, you know, and we just found each other, like Kurt and I, we just found each other and other people who felt the same way. And then we were passionate and we loved music. And so we made our own music because the music on the radio or in the glossy magazines, it wasn't speaking to us. And it was independent. And if you look at that Smells Like Teen Spirit video to answer Nima's question about the mainstream, there's these cheerleaders and those were strippers. Mm-hmm. Those girls were strippers. Okay, so we had this mainstream video. They had Anarchy A logos on their shirts. They were like supposed to be cheerleaders, but it was for anarchism. And so what, you know, what does anarchism mean? Is it smashing windows and bomb throwing? Not necessarily. Not as far as I'm concerned. Anarchism is about building your own structures independent of the government or the corporate sphere. And so it's no coincidence that when you would read like Maximum Rock and Roll or Flipside or the, you know, fanzines, and that anarchist symbol was prevalent in that media at the time, our underground media.
It was fashion though back then, because with a lot of those people, because it disappoints me how many people who were screaming anarchy back in the late 80s are now like telling people to vote for Barack Obama, which I always like I love the way you describe that kind of like voluntary living outside the mainstream system. I did an interview with Ian MacKaye in this movie DIY or Die, where he said
he's the king.
He's the king, and he, you know, his thing was like he wasn't against the major labels. He just was like, that's boring. I want to exist outside of it. He didn't want to smash it or tear it down. He didn't care about it. He just wanted to offer a better system. And he said, like, to me, success isn't if you have a bread company, a bakery, the success isn't putting a bakery on every corner in the world. Another kind of success is having that great bakery last for 50 years or for generations and just make great bread for the neighborhood, you know?
Yeah. And it's ironic that, you know, I called him the king where we're, you know, espousing
no kings.
But,
yeah.
But it's just kind of like he's has that gravitas, that kind of respect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and there was also the thing of, like, in punk rock, like, you weren't allowed to sign to a major label. It was selling out. And I got a lot of that because my band got signed to Warner Brothers, but we didn't get the perks. We didn't last long enough on the label to, like, get the fame and fortune. You must have gotten just horrible pushback from idiot fans who thought, like, do you have any stories about that?
Well, you would hear it about, like, how we sold out, but we were just like, you know, it's... I bought a house and like, this is a nice house.
There
and,
you go.
And we signed with the label and there were bands like Ian MacKay, Fugazi, Minor Threat, Pavement. There were bands that didn't want to sign to the major labels and they were fiercely independent. So I'm not going to, you know, we signed the contract. We did the deal. It was, it was Panasonic who owned Geffen Records at the time. It was just,
what was it that went through your head or in the band's discussions when you were talking about that? Did you guys want to get your music out to as many people as possible? Because I guess back then you didn't have to where you could just post all your videos on YouTube and become instant hits. Was it because you wanted to spread the music or why?
We wanted to spread the music, and it was also just things were just breaking and happening, and we were just going where the things where the energy was and where things were happening. And, you know, there was a check, I think, for like $250,000. And we're like, absolutely, we want the money. Right. And then, but the money was gone. I mean, there was taxes, commissions, and then you have to pay for the record out of that advance. And we bought some gear. Yeah, you know how it goes.
Major
Michael,
label,
right?
Those 70-page contracts. I read ours. Most bands don't read theirs. And I love that Steve Albini, The Problem with Music article. I'm sure you've read that. I think you're kind of referenced in it. Or it might be before you guys, but it's about the horrors of, like, really what a major label deal entails. And, you know, basically, if you read that 75-page contract, it should just boil down to one sentence. The company gets everything. The artist gets nothing forever. Sign here. You know, that's what it should say.
Yeah, unless you get success, and then it you know, you basically get like 18%,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah, but now there's new models, things changed. You know, internet information revolution is changing things, and it's just going to be more opportunity for people. The way I see it,
I got to say that playing in a band, you know, on the punk level, where like you're calling up this, you know, calling up the clubs yourself. Out of Numbers and Maximum Rock and Roll, all the skills that I learned with that have carried over to successes in my life. I mean, just the fact that we're on 15 radio stations and we're a completely independent show, in 6 months we're on 15 stations. That's because I spend 4 or 5 hours a day calling stations using the same skills I used to use calling clubs and saying, hi, you've never heard of me, but let me send you a demo, you know?
And we talk about ideas that most of talk radio would scoff at and never even consider.
Although, you know, people that talk about the free market and capitalism and, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and not being beholden to government regulation, I mean, they're describing punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure sounds like it. Well, again, it's anarchism.
Yeah.
And being independent.
We're
except they're not consistent because then they think that the cops and the military should enforce all of that at the barrel of a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to get more into all that in the second hour. But tell us just one more quick flipper story before we go to the break. If you got
another flipper story.
I got to say this. Like, I knew it's amazing to me that they're nice now because I knew so many people in San Francisco who'd been like literally ripped off by members of that band. Like, you know, roommates and stuff like that. That like somebody was talking about starting a website called like, you know, flipperdebtstories.com or something.
It was 2007, and well, I was invited to play All Tomorrow's Parties with them. Oh. And Thurston Moore called me. He was a curator, and it's at this.
Well, go ahead and hold that thought. We'll get more to Chris's flipper story after this quick trip to the market. Stick with us on the Freedom Fiends.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
All right, this is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza Show. And this is Michael W. Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Over there in the Texas Hill Country, we got Mr. Nima Vadadi. How you doing there, Nima? And over on his gentleman farm in the Pacific Northwest, in the rural Pacific Northwest, we have Krist Novoselic from Nirvana and Flipper. And how you doing there, Chris?
Mighty fine, thank you.
You got a flipper story for us before we go to hour two, where we're going to talk about politics and how to fix the world?
Well, it's just kind of like how isolated I could be living out here in the hills. I don't really go to a lot of rock shows. And so in 2007, I was invited to play. That's how I got started with Flipper, to play this one show with them at All Tomorrow's Party Festival in the United Kingdom.
It's like Thurston Moore's fault, right?
Yeah, he was a curator there, and so we start playing. Well, I go to a show. I go on stage, and I start playing with Flipper, and I notice that everybody has their cell phones out and holding them up in the air. And I'm like, what is this? What are these people doing? And they're like, oh, they're filming us. Like, for the minute, I just had no idea that people were doing this. This is some new ritual or something.
Some new ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah, like instead of holding lighters, they just hold up their cell phones and you see the light on them. No, yeah, they're sharing them
for
with their friends.
For those Flipper ballads.
Yeah. Flipper love songs. Yeah, it's, and there's some part of me that, like, the first time I saw that, I was like, this isn't rock and roll, this is punk. When I was your age, we had to fix our, the Flipper has a board game. That's Flipper on tour on one of their records. And they had this truck that was famous. It was like a big UPS style truck that they drove around town in. It said on the side of it, Flipper suffered for your sins. Now it's your turn. That's how they greeted people when they came to their town. And there's a thing on the board game of truck breaks down on the way to gig, go back 20 spaces. But then the next one is like, Ted fixes the truck engine with parts from a ballpoint pen, go ahead 2 spaces. And Flipper was so like by the seat of their pants back in the day. It's amazing that they not only lived, but like ever made it to a gig, but they did. And it was cool. And sometimes people, they would like hand their bass to somebody and go to the bar and drink while someone from the audience went up and played with them.
That's a Flipper show. We're always, like, just unexpected, always on the edge, very dangerous.
Yeah, and there's some part of me that says, like, holding up your cell phones, that's not punk, but it's actually totally punk, I think, to adopt the latest technology that kind of democratizes everybody. You know, like, everyone can make a record now, everyone can make a movie, and that's what punk rock was about.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember, like, the first record I put out, we didn't have money to make the covers. It was a 7-inch in, like, 1984, and we had a friend that worked at Kinko's print up on cardstock some covers that we typed on a typewriter, and then we had a party and had people take razor blades and plastic bags and put the records together. You know, did you guys do stuff like that?
That's the kind of thing. And or fanzines, Xerox copies. You go to the grocery store with a copy machine and you make these collages and you type things and you make a and you hand it out, and you make like 10 of them.
I remember seeing a guy in front of the library panhandling to get money to print copies of his zine. That's totally punk, and a lot of people now like would be like, oh, that's some bum. But no, it's totally voluntary, and it's not, you know, forcing someone else to pay for it or like some government
grant. Yeah, exactly. It's totally voluntary, and you don't even need that anymore. Everybody has a blog. I mean, you can never read every blog.
Yeah. Does anyone still do zines?
I don't know. I haven't really seen any, but like when we were doing these things in the '80s, we weren't really complaining about the state or complaining about the corporations. We were too busy making things and doing things. We were rehearsing. We were recording. People were making those zines. They were too busy, you know, organizing shows, putting up posters, making posters.
We figured out a way to do things and complain at the same time. It's called having a radio show.
Yeah, and in hour two, we will have Chris Novoselic complaining. Chris Novoselic from Nirvana and Flipper complaining, or men offering some solutions. Not just complaining about corporations and the state, but offering solutions. And then the Freedom Fiends will counter with other solutions. And conflict is the essence of drama. But it's respectful on the Freedom Fiends. So stick around for hour two of the Freedom Fiends talk radio musical show with Chris Novoselic from Nirvana and Flipper.
Worms.
Turn my mic down a little bit.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
Live Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati out here in Austin, Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the Wormabago rolling around Wyoming. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
It's going excellent. It's really, really excellent. And today we're interviewing Chris Novoselic from Nirvana and Sirvana, which is his new thing with Sir Paul McCartney. And he was in Flipper, too. I want to play a little short clip here of John Lennon, one of my favorite musicians and, like, just favorite guys of rock music. Like, I like everything he did. And this is him in a command performance for the Queen of England, basically making fun of her to her face in front of her peer or her you know, upper crusty peers in a command performance. Making fun of her for not clapping. Let's listen to this real quick. It's a good one.
The people in the cheaper seats, clap your hands. Ah. And the rest of you, if you just rattle your jewelry.
Yeah, and then they pan up to the Queen. Like, he's saying, like, yeah, good. It's okay to clap at a rock musical show, and those of you up in the...
We are not immune.
Yeah, basically, the Queen isn't clapping because she's the Queen. And,
My jewelry does not rattle. Yeah. I paid extra for it.
I've always thought that the coolest thing any musician can do, I mean, rock music is about being anti-establishment. And when I think about your new band, Sirvana, I think of it as like two of the coolest guys from the coolest band in the world. You know, a guy from Flipper and Nirvana, that's you, and a guy from the Germs, Pat. And then I think of it as like these other guys who are in these cool bands, Nirvana and the Beatles and the Foo Fighters, but like, one of them loves the fact that his name is Sir, that he's been knighted. When John Lennon, who I like better, gave back his knighthood, he's like, I don't want this. You guys are warmongers, which was one of the most rock and roll things anyone's ever done. And the other guy is this really cool guy that I used to see in the band Scream in D.C. Talk about old school punk rock. Did you ever see Scream, Chris?
I did. Yeah. I saw him in Seattle, like, in the late 80s.
Yeah. They were just a steamroller, man. And they used to cover Helter Skelter, which now he's covering with you guys with the guy who wrote it, which is pretty cool. But, you know,
I played Helter Skelter with Paul McCartney.
That is cool. Yeah, which Paul McCartney, I think, wrote because people were saying he was too soft and couldn't rock like John Lennon. And
he could totally rock. But, you know, yeah. Paul is so... His stature now, he's like a president.
I don't like that. That's not cool. Right. And I don't like that Dave Grohl goes to the White House and plays You're My Hero, you know, for Obama and dedicates it to him. That's square, man. That's so square. It's so not what rock and roll is about, I think.
Well, I'm proud of Dave. I think it's cool that he does that stuff.
So. Yeah. I wouldn't.
Kid Rock was there.
that does not help your cool. case.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So basically, the first hour of this was like two old guys talking about the good old days. I picture it like, you know, two guys talking about World War II.
Yeah, it was nostalgia.
And then their grandson, my grandson. And here's my grandson to tell you why you're wrong about everything. All right. Talk about politics. What's your thing? What's your thing, Chris?
That's what we want to know. Yeah. Okay, Chris, you wrote a book. Tell us about what you espouse in your book.
Okay. So in the book of Grunge and Government, it's basically there's two themes there. There's two themes. It's there's a part of it's a memoir about Nirvana, and it's pretty short. I mean, I just riff on different things in the book, and another one is about a political association and participation. And so what we talked about in the previous hour, I touch on that in the book, is about young people coming together, people of all ages coming together and voluntarily and building their own structures. And so what I'm recommend to people is just like go out and get involved in your community, join a fraternal group, get involved with your local party central committee, which I kind of gave up on. Well, I have given up on Democrats, but as part of as a grassroots group, and that's always been the check on power is through association. When people come together, they can amplify their voices, and then you can change things, especially right. in our system right now, which is really broken.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree completely with most of that. I mean, the system's broken. It just seems like why. why focus on fixing the system when having a system in the first place is possibly the problem? And maybe we need to talk more about what you think the root is. Chris, right now, I think we'd all agree that the society is not functioning as it should. Why do you think that is? What's the problem? Who's the enemy if there is an enemy?
I don't know if society isn't not functioning as it should. I think it's more of government. And when you ask why have a system, I think the cat was out of the bag when we many years ago when we transitioned from like hunter-gatherer and we became stationary in these agricultural societies, and people started living together. And then there was also stratification, okay, because people were creating wealth. There was agricultural surpluses.
Right.
And we needed rules. And then that was the turning point right there. And so there's always been states and rulers and the ruled, and we're trying to get more towards, you know, democracy and more inclusion. And that's been, you know, in the last couple hundred years. And I touch on that in my book, is like in the United States, how things are just so broken. There's all this, you know, special interest influence, the lobbyists, and then people are just kind of shut out of the system. They feel disconnected. And so what I'm proposing is that we would change some of the electoral rules and make things more inclusive and try to bring some balance back to the system.
Well, what kind of balance? Like, what would that look like?
Well, it would look like, so right now in the United States House of Representatives, there's a law, and it's not in the United States Constitution, that the statute is that there's these single member districts where people, you vote for one person and then one person gets elected, okay?
Winner takes all, right.
It's a winner take all electoral system, right? And so, and that gets worse when you think about it. There are these insiders, and it doesn't matter if it's a supposedly independent commission or these just partisan gerrymanders, and they basically cook these districts and they make it to benefit their own party and then their own agenda. Okay, and so I'm chairman of Fair Vote, the Center for Voting and Democracy, and for like past 25 years. We've been advocating proportional representation for the United States House and for state legislatures and on the local level, okay? And so there's a lot of misconceptions and myths about proportional representation. So we're calling it fair representation voting, just to give it a new kind of a – give it a new look so people can give it a new look, right? Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the way people call it voluntarism now instead of anarcho-capitalism or anarchy. Sometimes things need a PR change. Is that what you're saying?
Anarchism is just like – that word is just so loaded, okay? And so when most people don't realize that there are American versions of proportional representation, this fair representation voting, okay? So if you go to Europe – all right, and you go to Italy or Israel, or, you know, there's a low threshold for election. It takes like 1.5%, 2-4% to win a seat in their legislature, right? And then voters vote for a party, and it's usually a closed party list system. So you go to the ballot, and there's this Green Party, Social Democrats, Conservatives, whatever. Okay. And so in the United States, we really don't have that culture. We like to vote for the person.
Right.
So with these American forms of fair representation voting, they're candidate based. It's not a party system. Though they could accommodate parties. They could say, like, you know, Joe Smith, Republican, Jane Doe, Democrat next to their name. And you can have parties can still nominate candidates. It keeps all that intact. Also, so that's a distinction between the American version and these like Euro versions. And the second distinction is the threshold. Okay, an American version 33% to get elected, 25%, maybe 15. You know, it just depends on what the magnitude of the district is. Okay, so if you have a 3-seat district, it's wonky stuff. And so just imagine instead of living in a congressional district where there's one representative, what we're saying, there could be like 3 representatives, okay? And then you can use a system called limited voting, And so you'd get one vote to elect three people. And so that has this proportional effect. And so it would take 33% of the vote to get elected. And so, you'd have a Republican and a Democrat and an independent.
Right, right. But it seems like the whole thing is to get people's wants and needs and desires heard, people's voices heard in a better way, because right now the system's unresponsive. Is that sort of what the goal is?
Yeah, that's what the goal is. The goal is if you pay taxes and if you're subject to the rules and laws of the land, you should at least have a fair shot on who's making these rules and laws.
Right.
The ballot, and there's a lot of people like under the fair representation voting for Massachusetts. Okay, right now there are 9 U.S. House seats in Massachusetts, and they're all Democratic seats. Even though they elected a Republican U.S. senator in the last 5 years, Mitt Romney was elected governor of Massachusetts. There's 40% of the state will vote Republican. However, the seats, all 9 of those seats are Democratic seats because it was cooked by the state legislature.
Right.
So imagine instead of 9 single member districts with winner take all election rules, there'd be 3 member districts. Okay. And so with Fair Vote, we did the analysis. Every one of these seats would have at least one Republican.
Chris, I guess where it breaks down for me is what if I don't want to outsource my desires and my subjugation in essence? What if I don't want to pay those taxes and don't want to be subject to those rules? I still have to be in this system, right?
Well, see, this is about elections and it's not about taxes or not about the effect of government or the state on the individual. This is about the interface between the voter and their government, because we're all bound by the United States Constitution and our respective state constitution, and we are given rights under those constitutions. So
if that's the premise, then you're saying this system would be much more democracy oriented and better at responding to people's wants and desires. We'll be back with some more counterpoints when we return from this trip to the market with Chris Novoselic.
Novoselic.
Yes, there we go. Thanks.
Worms.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
All right. You're back for a segment in hour 2 of 2 of the Freedom Fiends talk radio musical show. And this is Mr. Michael Dean, but I'm turning it over to my co-host for the most part for this segment because he's younger, hipper, and smarter about the politics than I am. And we are talking politics, and that's too narrow. We're talking how to better organize society with Chris Novoselic from Nirvana. And Flipper and Chris Novoselic, what is your blog and your website so people can go to it, Chris?
Oh, go to fairvote.org, fairvote, fairvote.org, and check out this voting changes to the way we interact with our government.
Excellent. Right.
Before the jump, we were talking a little bit about some of the ways Chris has outlined in his book and that Fair Vote talks about of making government more responsive to people's wants, needs, desires, etc. And there's this guy, Gar Alperovitch, who writes a little bit about these kinds of things. And he's got this phrase called democratizing the economy. And when I read that phrase, I almost stopped and thought, well, isn't there already a structure, a natural structure for that? that? And isn't that just what we call the market? Isn't that the best way, the price system in the market, to meet out what different desires and to place resources in the people who most want them or can most get them?
Well, absolutely. I mean, a lot of that's just natural law. I mean, sure.
if that's the case,
I don't really know a lot about economics. I'm not really an economics person.
Well, it seems to me that if we're talking about how to make society better, I think the root of what sours and what where a lot of the big corporate structures that people don't like, and the unresponsiveness of the state, and the fact that you get your paychecks at the end of the week and or at the end of the month, and your biggest expense other than your house payment is your tax bill, and then realizing that pretty much 100% of people, I would say, in America are unhappy with at least one thing that they're paying for with their taxes. And why do we have to have a system where everybody's unhappy in some sense about what the government's doing? And I think your fair vote does address some of that. But I think that to go deeper, we could maybe realize that why do we have to have a state structure in the first place?
Well, it really hits on how modest the reforms fair vote are that we're promoting. And it's not about like tearing down the state or the government. It's more about it, and it's rooted, these voting systems are constitutional, and they've been scrutinized by the courts. There's tons of case law, there's scholarship, academia through that lens has looked through it. So they're proven. We're not making this stuff up.
Right.
They've been these election rules have been around for many, many years, and again they're proven. So, and it's a pretty modest proposal, but it's new to a lot of people. Like before 1967, some states had multi-member districts, but they were all kind of like block voting at large. It's wonky stuff. So just think of it this way: like when you go to the ballot, and you'd have more choices. And then you, as a voter, you would have this sophistication that the insiders, that the demographers, the map drawers, the gerrymanderers, you take the sophistication away from them, and it's in your hands. And you can have one vote to elect three people. You could rank three candidates: your first choice, your second choice, your third choice. There are these different systems, and so if you know your listeners out there. Who want to shrink government? Well, perhaps there would be a candidate on the ballot who would appeal to those sensibilities and who would actually have a real shot of getting elected. Okay, and it's about grassroots again. These types of voting systems they accommodate political association, not like these closed primaries, which are basically state monopolies on association. I think that it's universal that those are really part of the problem now. Okay.
Right. Well, you voted. You voted with your wallet proportionately. You, according to Wikipedia, you gave money to both Ron Paul and Barack Obama. Which the only other person I know who did that.
I didn't give money to a Barack Obama.
Okay, but you backed him in some way. Did you?
Yeah, I voted for him.
Okay. yeah, the only other person I know who backed both of those people was Edward Snowden, who's a big hero of ours. So I guess it's
He's in good company.
Was it proportionate? Were you doing that proportionately, voting for one and donating to the other, or was that years apart?
I was in San Francisco at this – what's that big hotel on Mission Street? Anyway, it's this Ron Paul salon with Ron Paul, and it cost like $100 or something. And I just happened to be there, and so I paid it. And so I had to report it transparency.
We'll be back with more on Freedom Fiends with Chris Novoselic after this trip to the free market.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Oh, right. This is the Freedom Fiends talk show. And this is Michael Dean. We got Nima Vidotti. And today we have our musical political guest, Chris Novoselic from Flipper, telling us how to change the world. That's too broad. We're discussing ways to democratize the use of government force against us, I guess.
that's too narrow now. Come on, Goldilocks. No, but we'll get even more narrow than that, I guess, because Chris, like me and Michael, was a former Democrat. And so, Chris, tell us a little bit about why you're a former Democrat and not a current Democrat.
Well, I got involved with the Washington State Democrats in 2004, and I joined this Washington State Grange in 2003. And which is a nonpartisan organization that does political advocacy and community work. And so I was just really interested in these, you know, grassroots associations, basically. And so and living in a small county, I rose up through the ranks really fast in the Democrats, and I eventually became the chair of the county party. I was a state committee officer, and I was active in the grassroots part of the Democrats. And then it just seemed like there were two parties. There's this weak, ineffectual, state-controlled grassroots part of the party. And then there's this private group, which is like a super PAC, soft money conduit, that basically launders money around individual campaign contribution limits. And a lot of the rules of a Democratic Party are anti-democratic with a small d, just the way that,
right.
and the state has a lot of it has to do with these clunky state apparatus that there's these state rules about how the party operates. Their state Republicans and Democrats are state parties is what they are. And they're a political graveyard. And in my book, I encouraged people to get involved with their local party, and also get involved with like fraternal groups or even build your own new kind of organizations, as long as you were meeting the needs of people and trying to accomplish things. And I think I was wrong in the book about the Democrats. So I know I quit. I mean, I don't think there's any salvation for them. And what they need to do is be challenged. And I think that could happen, especially in a state like Washington, where we have election rules. We have this top two election rules. It's a majority voting system, so you don't get this like wasted vote. And if you can get a new party in the top two and you have the right message and the right strategy, I think you can appeal to voters. So how do you – and I'll segue into that. So like moving away from Democrats now, and like there needs to be these new forms of association, right? And what is this new form of association going to look like? Well, political association is going to call up their cousin or their brother that's a near relative called social networking, okay? And so whoever – and there's a book called Millennial Makeover by House and Winograd. And this is the thesis of their book is like whoever connects with the millennial generation or connects with the population – through social networking, through in politics, they're going to dominate politics for the next generation. And see, Democrats and Republicans don't see that because they're not interested in that. They're not interested in grassroots because that means that these politicians would have to be accountable to more people. Okay.
Well, not only that, but I think that the things that the big Democrats and big Republicans want are antithetical to what the grassroots people want. You know, they want more corporate welfare and more warfare state. They want the things that the average person does not want. And so I think they, you know, people used to ask Ron Paul, how do you get all the young people on your side? And Ron Paul didn't say, you know, he would say, well, it's my message. It has nothing to do with my strategy or how much money I'm putting into social networking or social marketing or anything like that. It's because I want peace and freedom, and you guys don't. So it's about the message.
I think that's part of it. It's the message appealed to people, but also he captured the imagination online as he found that secret sauce, and which happens on the internet. You have these phenomenons, things go viral. And the first person to do that was Howard Dean, and he had a different message from Ron Paul.
No relation.
Okay. And then,
no relation.
And then Obama for America, which is OFA, which is basically a de facto third party. It's the Obama party. And that was another reason why I quit Democrats, because here I was the chair of the Waukegan County Democratic Central Committee, and following all the rules Okay. And then this person comes over from Obama for America, which is another group. And like, well, who elected you and who are you accountable to? And, you know, it was just kind of like there was the writing was on the wall. Like this Democratic Party as a voice for people is a sham. And same as the Republican Party, too.
Yeah. And the thing is, Chris, I think that those are foregone conclusions, right? I mean, Lord Acton said that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think it's well documented in other countries, especially when there's revolutions, that the radicals, once they win and gain control of the state in wherever geographical region they're in, then they become the conservatives because they have the power and they want to conserve their own hold on the power. And I think no matter what kind of tinkering you do within the political system, as long as there's it's widely accepted that there's a small group of people who gets to make laws for everybody else, then those people are going to become jealous of that power and corrupt it, no matter who they are.
I want to go back to something you said in the first hour, Chris, of, you know, at some point agriculture happened and then people started taxing it because they needed to organize it. And I don't look at it that way, like, oh, it needed to be done. I looked at it like that's where the real organized tyranny started, when people went from being hunters and gatherers to where they had the resources in one place in the form of farms. And the state said, oh, now we don't have to have roaming bands of armies conquering different lands. We can just sit here and steal from these people and hold
a sword. We can lay and collect taxes.
Hold a sword to their neck. Yeah. And to me, it seems like the whole system is wrong. It's immoral. The idea of taxation, representation, and rulers, no matter how you divvy it up and arrange the math to make it more fair to each person, it seems like a broken system to me. And it seems like trying to tinker it is like trying to find a way to make slaves in the 1800s more comfortable, when the real question should be, let's get rid of slavery. And a lot of people would say back then, well, we want to get rid of slavery, but how would the cotton get picked? And that's not the question. The question is, why do you have slaves? And I think that tinkering it around, and you could say, well, but it's a system and we're stuck with it. But people had to say originally, stand up and say slavery is wrong before there could be anything done about it. What do you think about all that?
Well, what they did is they organized a party called the Republican Party, because the Whigs were too wishy-washy on slavery and Democrats were all for slavery. And then we had to fight this terrible bloody war to solve that. And it resolved a lot of questions, also the Civil War about federalism and this and that. But let's address the sentiment of you two gentlemen here. Is like a lot of it has to do with the American the American mentality, okay? And when I was talking earlier about these American forms of proportional representation, it's like it's a candidate based. It's not a Euro party based system, okay? It's more geographic. Like, we elect our representatives from states. We're not going to have one national election like Israel or Germany, okay, where this pool of candidates comes out of the whole country, okay? It's an American version of it. And so what you two are hitting on also is, like, we're trying to define, like, what is America, okay? In America, United States, there seems like there's this uneasy marriage, okay, between, like, socialism and freedom. And Americans love freedom, okay? But Americans love socialism, too. But, they, you know, there's this tension and there's this push and pull. So, like Freedom Fiends is important to be on the radio in the United States, because it's expressing that sentiment, okay? Because people really need to hear that, or they'll get docile, or, you know, like, we'll turn into Sweden or Denmark
or
something.
Well, that's a question. You know what I mean? This has happened in Turkey and a few other places. When you have more proportionate democracy, I think you're kind of missing my question. And going back to, well, it's what we have and we have to work within it and here's how to fix it. But what about in your system, okay, say the Nazis. Say some Nazis want to get together and just act like the Nazis did in World War II. What if they get 10% of the vote? Do they get 10% of the army to do their bidding? Or what if 51% of the people under your system want to bomb Croatia? Do we bomb Croatia?
Well, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic, okay, and so there's all these checks and balances. Like, say, if you want to, okay. So it depends on if some radical party gets 10%. Well, we need to design a system. Like, maybe 10% is they didn't reach the threshold to get elected. Maybe it takes 25% or 15% or 20% to get elected. Okay, because this is American system of proportional fair representation voting. There's higher thresholds. It's not Israel. It's not Italy. It's not Germany. It's the American version. Okay, and then you have these like checks and balances. Like it's only for the U.S. House. You'd still have the United States Senate, where there's two senators from every state. That's enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. What we're proposing with fair vote, it's completely legal with the United States Constitution. It would be a statutory change. It would be a simple change to do it. There's still a president of the United States. There's still a Supreme Court of the United States. And there's all these checks and balances. And so,
but what we're saying though is that even though there's those checks and balances on paper, when it comes to where the rubber meets the road and the people who have this massive amount of power, the American state apparatus and military apparatus is more powerful than anything the earth has ever seen in history. And the people at the top of that, to them, these checks and balances are things to work around. They're tiny hurdles, but they're good jumpers, and they figure out ways to work around that. I mean, look at things like the night raids from JSOC in Afghanistan, the NDAA, the NSA, who has been spying on us counter to the Constitution for years. And so I feel like no matter what kind of things you put on paper, there's great legal minds who have the incentive to work for the state out ways to get around that.
You live in Texas and you get to vote on one person whose district was custom tailored for them. Do you feel like, Nima, do you feel like you have a choice on the ballot when you go vote for your U.S. House member?
Only because his rep when he was younger was Ron Paul.
No, okay. But even then, no, right. I don't feel like I have a choice.
Imagine if there were like three, you look at a ballot, United States House of Representatives, and there's like six or seven candidates on there. Then you could rank three of them. Here's my first choice because he completely believes what I believe. Here's my second choice. Well, she doesn't, not all the way, but I can live with her. And here's my third choice. I don't even have a third choice. I can vote if I want it, but this isn't compulsory voting. Okay. Do you think you'd have more power as a citizen and taxpayer with that kind of ballot, Nima?
The thing is, Chris, I don't want the power. I want my decisions to affect me and my family and anybody who chooses to associate with me. I don't want to give my power to some delegate.
But this is the power for the ballot. You're voting for that.
We'll get to that point.
Kind of mentality.
We'll get to that point in just a minute.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net. All right. This is the Freedom Fiends, and that was my song, Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector? And we have Chris Novoselic from Nirvana and Flipper and Fairvote talking today about tweaking the stuff, tweaking the way that democracy works to make it more fair to people, he says. And my comment during the break was basically, you know, I think that if internal combustion engines are a problem, and I think we need to go to, like, plasma-powered flying cars like in the cartoons when we were kids. And Chris, I think what Chris is trying to do is still an internal combustion engine. It's a bizarre different one, like a Wankel engine or something, but it's still an internal combustion engine. I think the internal combustion engine of democracy is dead and needs to be replaced with some kind of more voluntary self-rule. And Chris says, no, we can fix it. We can fix this engine by using a different configuration. So tell me why that's wrong or why that's right and why you think differently or the same, Chris.
I think that what most people want is security. They want a job. They want their health and well-being of their families. And it's hard enough getting people to go out and vote in the first place. Okay. And it's a modest change because of the constraints of the rule of law in the United States. Fair vote, again, we advocate a proven court scrutinized changes to voting, okay? And it could be a big change, and it's just about fairness. An appeal to your listeners, like, so you're a Republican voter and you live in a district where it elects a Democrat every time, uncontested, uncompetitive election. Well, if you use a fair representation voting system, then you could at least elect somebody, not just vote. You would more than likely elect somebody who really spoke to your needs and values. And maybe your needs and values are you're a committed libertarian.
See, I think that's like if you were heterosexual and they voted that 10% of the time you have to have gay sex because it's good for you. Or if you grunge music, you have to listen to 1 hour of classical a day because it's good for you.
You don't have to vote, Michael.
Yeah, but if I don't vote, but, you know.
Then don't vote, okay.
But I still get oppressed.
He still has to pay the taxes.
I still get oppressed by it.
Some people think we should. You still have to pay taxes, and you're subject to the rules and the laws of the land. But this is a conversation on the being broadcast, and so perhaps there's somebody out there who does vote and would want a better value in their vote, for their vote. And cast a meaningful vote. Maybe you would even vote, Michael, if there was somebody who espoused what your values were. Hey, I'm going to vote for her. She's right on.
No.
And you know what? She would come and look for you, or they would come and look for you and say, hey, I really need your vote because I need every vote that I can get, because if I get over 20% of the vote, if I get over 25% of the vote, depending of the system, I can get elected. They'll come and knock on your door. They'll send a volunteer. And check this out. And it's grassroots politics. And it's not some slick ad, millions of dollars funded by special interests. Joe Smith for United States House. More education, better for schools.
So you ran
more safety.
You ran for office as a joke, right? Or as a protest? When you ran for office as a protest, what was it?
It was a protest candidacy. I ran under the Grange Party because there's a state monopoly on nominations in Washington State where you could say, I could have said, prefers Boy Scouts of America Party. And the state would have allowed me to take the message of the Boy Scouts for my own means. And that's wrong. And there used to be protections in the United States Constitution under the First Amendment, okay, where you'd have the, you don't, you're not subjected to the to forced association. Okay, we can have our club here, the Michael, Nima, and Chris Club, and say we're the only members of this club. But then the state comes and says, no, you got to allow these people in. Now I hear people out there, oh well, these parties, these party bosses, these smoke filled back rooms. Well, that's right, I agree with that sentiment. However,
oh, we still got like 20 seconds.
You got 20 seconds.
There's better ways to do this.
I think he's cutting out a little bit. All right. We'll chat with Chris a little bit after this. That's the last segment. Thank you so much for joining us, Freedom Fiends. Thanks. Join Michael tomorrow with Bill Buppert.
We'll have Chris back in about 6 months to talk more. And you can check out his blog. I'll post it in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal.